I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Michael Roderick. Michael is the CEO of Small Pond Enterprises. He's a social catalyst who believes in the power of making meaningful connections for others. Michael has been a high school English teacher, a Broadway producer, and a director of business development. Most recently, Michael founded the Connecting Connectors Conference, also known as ConnectorCon, and Relationship Adventure Day. Michael, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, you and I have known each other for a number of years, and it's great to be able to connect in this venue. And I wondered if we could start off by talking about all the different fascinating things that you've done in your career. And I wonder if you could start off by talking about what are some of the keys to successfully making those transitions.
Sure. Well, I think that most of the time when people are thinking about making a transition, there is a lot of this sort of grass is always greener mentality that happens. And I think that a lot of the time we sort of say, oh, well, I want to do this particular thing, but we don't necessarily take the time to research it and figure out, is that particular world a world that I'm really interested in? So I know that for me personally, any time that I was going to be making a transition, I always made it a point to find people who were successful in whatever that position was that I was looking at. So while I was teaching English, I was meeting people who were involved in producing, and I was having conversations with them around what does this life actually look like? What are the real logistics of it? How do people become successful? What are the ways that people are not successful? And really digging into that. Same thing when I looked at the director of business development position. I had a lot of conversations with people who had taken business development positions or sort of worked in those fields, so I could get a better sense of whether or not it was something that I wanted to kind of give a shot to.
That makes sense, and you're right. A lot of people don't take the time to do that kind of research.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something, taking the time to sort of figure out, okay, what is this world going to be like, I think is huge. The other thing that I think is really, really important is identifying who are the people who are on their way up in whatever industry you want to switch into. So let's say you're working in one position somewhere, and maybe you want to go into a completely different industry. I always like to say that if you go to the people who are full, a lot of the time they look at it as a favor. So if they're really, really doing fantastic and they've got so many things happening and thousands of people are contacting them, it's going to be pretty difficult to kind of break through the noise. But the people who are hungry, the ones who are on their way up in that industry, they still see opportunity in meeting people who are interested in that industry, who want to sort of move in a good direction in that industry. So a lot of what I would do is I would find people who were on their way up and then have conversations with them about how could I make them more successful in the work that they were doing. And what eventually ended up happening was I started getting offered all sorts of opportunities as a result of really being invested and interested in the success of those people.
Right. So what you're doing is you're offering to help first.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's really, really important. I also think that it's a very common thing for people to feel like they can't offer anything, especially if somebody is at a higher level than you, whether that be that they're making more money or they seem to be more successful or whatever the story is. But I am of the firm belief that you can help anyone if you ask enough questions. So if you really dig in, most of the time, somebody's going to give you an idea of where their challenge is, where their struggles are, and you never know how you're going to be able to help them. It may not necessarily always be in a business sense. There may be something personally bothering them that you can help them with, or in some cases, it might be a resource that you know about that they don't know about. You never know until you actually ask.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, so looking at your background, going from being a high school English teacher to a Broadway producer, I know that getting involved in theater for lots of people is very challenging. It's very competitive.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if there might be an example or two that you'd be willing to share about that particular transition where your probing or asking the right questions helped you get a foot in the door.
Sure. So I had a number of conversations with producers who were on their way up. And one of the things that I talked to them about was this idea of, well, what is the most important element? And many of them came back to me with the idea of finding investors. So that was a big, big factor for most of the producers that I spoke to. They were looking for investors for their projects. And what I found was that there were a lot of people who right off the bat were saying, well, if I can find this person for you, I want this credit or I want this percentage or whatever the situation was. And what I did, which was a little different, was I said, you know, tell me a little bit about the project and I'll just float it out to some people and see if there might be an opportunity. And I'm not saying I'm going to find you an investor, but, you know, if somebody comes back to me and says that they're interested, I'm happy to put you guys in touch and you guys can then sort of take it from there and kind of figure it out. And what that did was it really kind of changed the dynamic because most of the young producers were looking for credit right away. And I was saying I'd rather spend the time learning and getting better at raising money and developing relationships with investors than actually going out there and saying, I want this credit, I'm going to raise this, and all these different types of things. And that actually led to me meeting more producers and getting more opportunities.
Interesting. Did you find that that going through this process of doing research, making new relationships, and offering to give first helped you create some connection or intersection between personal fulfillment for you and profitability?
Oh, definitely. Because you do these things, you sort of help out, and then you let people know what it is that you are looking for. So I had many instances where at the time I was running a general management business, which in the theater world, people hire you to manage their shows, to handle all of the logistics and kind of be a de facto producer for smaller level productions. So not off-Broadway or Broadway, but off-Broadway. And a lot of the time, what ended up happening was because I had helped these other producers and made some introductions and made some connections, I would be referred some pretty solid clients in that space and then often have more opportunities.
Interesting. So along the way, what have been some of your challenges?
I would say, you know, one of the challenges that comes up is the sort of world of tons of people coming at you the second that somebody decides to talk about what you do. So I had a number of instances where I did really good work for somebody, or I made, you know, I did a really great job on a particular show or a particular project. And then all of a sudden I had, you know, tons of people who wanted to meet with me. So I remember my first, when I sort of first made the big transition, I had basically like days where it was just meetings back to back. And it was tons of people who they wanted to meet. They wanted to learn more about Broadway producing. They wanted to be involved in some way. And I found that the big challenge for me was actually getting my time back. I was really just kind of overwhelmed with the number of people who wanted to have a conversation and how many of those people were actually in a position where they were going to be helpful to me and my projects and how many of those people were just in need of something. So I had to start to learn how to balance that because it really did challenge me quite a bit. I had a couple of instances where I really was starting to become connection rich and cash poor, and that's kind of the worst place to be.
So how do you solve that? Because it sounds to me like you were facing the situation where you're on the way up in the new field, and others who are interested but haven't gotten a foothold yet are interested in doing research with you.
Yeah. So I had to first figure out how to manage my schedule a little bit better. So at first I was always taking these one-on-one meetings, and what I learned was they could take anywhere between a half hour to a full hour, and then my day was kind of done. So I started this experiment where I would try to meet not tons of people, but a good like 5 or 6 people at one time. And in some cases, I would sort of put them together, or in other cases, I'd kind of present it almost like office hours, where I'd say, I'm going to be here from this time to this time and show up whenever. And however many people are there, you know, if you manage to get there and nobody else is there, then you kind of get a one-on-one with me. But if you get there and there's 2 other people there, I'm going to sort of share my points with 2 or 3 of you. And that was incredibly helpful. That was, I think, the first time that I recognized the concept of leveraging your time versus trading your time. So a lot of the time when you're trading your time, you're sort of doing this like one-on-one, and it's either going to go well or it's going to go poorly. But when you take 4 or 5 people and you have a conversation with all of them at once, you're in essence leveraging your time, because now rather than spending 5 hours, you're maybe spending about 1 or 1.5 with 5 people.
And did that put people off at all?
You know, interestingly enough, it did not. I had a lot of people who were interested in this idea of meeting others who were kind of going through the same scenario. Now, there were certainly people who it made more sense and they really wanted to do more of a one-on-one, but most of the time they would communicate it to me. They'd tell me, they'd say, I really want to meet you one-on-one. Whereas a lot of them, if I said, hey, you know, I've had a lot of people ask this same question, I'm going to get a group of us together to kind of brainstorm around it. I tried to make it more of a, this is an opportunity for all of us, as opposed to, oh, I don't have enough time to meet with you. You know what I mean? I tried to really kind of change the conversation around it.
Well, it's probably true that in any situation, it's better to look at something as an opportunity rather than looking at it as a problem that has to be fixed.
Oh, definitely.
Michael, why do you think business leaders hit plateaus?
I think that business leaders hit plateaus because they get to a point in their business by saying yes to everything. And once they hit the point, a really high level of growth, or once they hit a point where they're somewhat successful, they suddenly have to start saying no, and they very rarely have learned anything about that process. I think that plateaus come from this result of not being able to say no to opportunities. And I think a lot of us have things that come our way and we think that they're an opportunity, but if we can't take full advantage of it, and if we can't really serve the person who's coming to us, it's not an opportunity, it's a coincidence. And I think it's really, really important for a business owner to be able to say, what is coming my way? Is this an opportunity? And if it's an opportunity, is saying yes to it going to lead to more opportunity or more possibility? And if this is just something that's come my way that I think is an opportunity, it's more of a coincidence, what can I do with this? If I'm not going to be able to serve this person as well, when they come to me with this problem, is there somebody else who could serve them better? And could I take that coincidence and turn it into a gift and give it to somebody else, send them that referral or sort of send them that opportunity? But I would say the main thing that happens most of the time in plateau situations is we're afraid to say no. We're afraid to say to somebody, you know what, this isn't a fit for me, or this isn't what I'm focused on right now, because we don't want to offend, we don't want to upset. But so many times we need to do that in order to be able to give ourselves the time to grow and also to really curate this group of people that are coming our way.
I see that scenario frequently with service businesses, particularly when the business is making money but not making tons of money, mm-hmm. right? So they may be sort of just barely managing cash flow. And an opportunity comes along. Somebody says, "Oh, I have a project that I think might be maybe you can help with." And the truth is, it might not be the best fit mm-hmm. for the company to take on that project. They can probably do it, mm-hmm. but it may be a stretch for them given the resources they have, they may not have the right ideal personnel to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. It might not be the most lucrative project. And in the end, they might end up spinning their wheels and losing money on it.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. Michael, what do you think it means to be an entrepreneur in 2015 versus what it might have been like 20 or 30 years ago?
I think the barrier to entry is significantly lower, which means your ability to specialize becomes increasingly more important. So when we didn't have the kind of access that we have now, it took a lot of money to start your own business. And you had to advertise, you had to sort of go through this whole process as an entrepreneur. And in essence, you could put up a shingle and sort of, you know, have your area and go out there and sell, and it worked relatively well. Now, anybody with a laptop or, you know, just basic resources can start a business. So as a result, there are tons of people out there saying, this is what I do and this is what I would love for you to pay money for, which means that the only way that you're going to cut through the noise is through specialization. So really taking the time to figure out, who is it that I serve, why do I serve them, and what am I helping them do, and being hyper, hyper specific about that, because there's just too many people out there who are pitching the same concept or the same product or the same service, and as a result, the consumer is overwhelmed. We have too many choices now. So the question is, how do you as an entrepreneur now come up with a way to present what you're doing that's uniquely yours? Something that people say, wow, that person does this way. And there really is nobody else who I can think of who focuses in this area, who makes these types of things happen.
I love the way you describe it, actually, that the buyer has too many choices. Because I think a lot of people think about it, well, I can really do this for anybody. Like, I'm a lawyer, right? I'm a business lawyer. I can write contracts and litigate and negotiate for anybody, for a big company, a small company, different industries. And you're right. There are so many people who offer those same kinds of services that it's really overwhelming to make a choice.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things where it's much, much easier to climb a vertical than it is to climb a horizontal. So if you are saying that your service can cover a wide range of people and that's how you're starting out, then chances are you're probably going to be competing on price with most other people who are trying to do the same type of thing or a similar type of service. But if you have a vertical and you say, you know what, we'll go to your law example, I focus in technology startups that make, you know, that just received a million in investment, that are focused specifically in the e-commerce space, and I help them with their content for their website. Well, people are going to know that, like, that's where you stand, and they're going to send those types of people to you, and you can climb in price much faster because people spend more on specialists than they do on generalists.
So speaking of specialization, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about your specialization and some of the stuff that is coming up for you in the near future.
Sure. So what I specialize in is relationship design. So I work with people who have pretty large networks, who aspire to be thought leaders, and I help them take a look at that network and figure out what are they saying yes to and what are they saying no to. And really help them get super clear on what opportunities are in front of them and what things are coming their way that are coincidences. And I work with them on their issues around maybe asking for the things that they want, writing the type of work that they want to, you know, put out there. What are they saying in the world? How is it different? And I do a lot of work specifically on the network and really taking a look at sort of who do you know. Because my belief is that all of the doors that you need open, the keys are in other people's pockets. So it's up to you to educate them so they are willing to give you those keys and really help with that particular dynamic. So as a result of doing that kind of work, I have two larger events that I do ConnectorCon is the first one, which is coming up in December, and that's basically the Connecting Connectors Conference. And what we do is we focus on finding really great connectors to come and speak about what is best practice in making introductions, developing partnerships, and building relationships. So right now we're in a call for proposals phase for that. So people go to connectorcon.com. They basically log in and sort of put in their ideas for concepts for the event. And then what we'll do is we'll go through those and we'll figure out sort of what are the most interesting things to program. And then in addition to that, there is an event that we do in the spring called Relationship Adventure Day. And that's basically a networking event meets scavenger hunt. So we bring people together from lots of different worlds and we give them all these different challenges to do throughout the day and connect them with different opportunities.
They sound pretty cool.
Thanks.
What are some of the results that have come out of these events in the past?
We've had people start businesses together. We've had some people become just really good friends. I've had people email me sometimes and just say, you know, the people that I met at RAD, I have been friends with all year, and I'm looking forward to seeing them at the next one. We've had some people who were about to make a purchasing decision about a particular program or a particular service who, because of one of the conversations that they had during that day, completely changed their mind and realized that they were actually going to be in a lot of trouble if they decided to make that purchasing decision. So we've had a lot of really interesting things happen. We've also had some people have some very, very emotional kind of moments because we have some great, great folks who do the workshops and the panels. So we've had some people have really, really emotional moments of deciding maybe that something might not be the best journey for them or the best choice for them, or realizing that they've been in a position that they don't want to be in anymore. So there's a lot of really fun, interesting things that come out of those events.
Wow. And how do people learn more about these?
So ConnectorCon is just connectorcon.com. And Relationship Adventure Day has some info on... It's just Relationship Adventure Day at splashthat.com. So we have the old page up that people can kind of take a look at from it. Relationship Adventure Day is invite only. So people have to basically sign in and say that they're requesting an invitation. And then we go through the process of figuring out who referred them and if we feel like the person who referred them is in line with everybody else, we send them an invite.
That's great. Well, Michael, I know that your career has followed some very interesting pathways. And I'm wondering, particularly given the fact that you've, you know, talked a lot about relationship building and how people influence one another, I wondered if you could share something about either people or resources that have been influential to you.
Sure. So Seth Godin wrote a book called Lynchpin. And in that book, he has a chapter where he talks about how the school system basically created sort of factory worker mentality, so that we were taught to sit in rows and we were taught to answer questions and we were taught to sort of keep our heads down because we were expected to leave school and go into the factory and do exactly as we're told and sort of make things happen in that way. And I remember reading that on the subway and thinking while I was teaching that I was spending most of my time having to focus on getting kids through standardized tests. And not only was I basically training these factory workers, but I was also a factory worker myself. So while thinking about that, I decided that I would leave teaching. So that book really caused me to take the leap and decide to move on from teaching and really start to focus more on the theater worlds. And that was a major, major influence on me.
You know, it's amazing how even a book can have such an impact.
Yeah.
And Seth Godin obviously is somebody who's an influencer to lots of people, and he's written tons of books and he's a fabulous speaker. But it's interesting how one of his books can be so pivotal.
Exactly.
Michael, who do you know personally who's doing remarkable work?
I would say Dory Clark. So Dory and I have been friends for a while now, and Dory is really looking at how we stand out in today's world, and she's taken so much time to really think painstakingly about what are the tools that people can use today to really make themselves stand out in their personal brand and sort of their style. And I think she just has so many great insights into that. And they're insights that work well from a networking standpoint. They're also insights that work well from a branding standpoint. And I really enjoy the fact that she takes the time to research people, interview people that have different viewpoints and conversations. So I'm always a huge fan of her stuff. I'm always retweeting her stuff and putting her stuff out there because she's just got some great, great content and is really, really helpful.
Yeah, I will confess that I'm also a big fan. Dory was a guest on Smashing the Plateau in an earlier episode.
And, awesome.
And for anybody who hasn't read her book, Stand Out, you should get it. It's not only is it like so on target for what you need to do in today's world in order to cut through the noise and be true to yourself, kind of find your way and be authentic, but it's well written. It's easy to follow. Yeah,
exactly.
So thank you for mentioning that.
Of course.
Michael, how can guests learn more about you? I know you mentioned the two sites for your two events. How can they learn more about you?
Sure. We have a website, which is just smallpondenterprises.com. And I am also very active on Twitter. So it's just my name, Michael Roderick. And if people tweet me there or sort of comment on things, I'm very, very active. I'll respond. I'll answer questions. There are times too when I'm at an event or something and I'll tweet. If I'm waiting for something, I'll tweet, does anybody need anything or need help with anything? And I'll make introductions sort of via Twitter and connect people. So I'm always happy to sort of be helpful on there and do what I can. And I've just recently started hopping on Periscope, and it's just the same thing. It's just my name, at Michael Roderick. And I hop on there from time to time and answer questions or just sort of put out some different points about things that I'm writing about. And I enjoy just kind of spreading information and trying to help out.
That's great. Michael, it's been such a pleasure having you on, getting to catch up, and also getting to talk about all the wonderful things that you do. So thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Michael Roderick, social catalyst and CEO of Small Pond Enterprises. Thank you again, Michael, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.